Good evening and welcome to The Big Fight, a show that is young at 21, the oldest running debate show on primetime television. I'm Sanket Upadhyay. It has been more than 3 weeks when we have seen a terrible situation over oxygen in this country, an oxygen emergency where oxygen wars have broken out between states. There is an oxygen war between states and center, particularly Delhi. This matter reached the courts, where some extremely powerful observations were made by the Delhi High Court, Allahabad High Court, Calcutta High Court, in a different context, of course, elections, Madras High Court in the context of elections, and then later even in the Supreme Court, where all these arguments and comments were made. States moved high courts, center moved the Supreme Court, but the larger question is, why move courts? Why should a matter which is ideally supposed to be handled between governments have to go to court? Are courts doing what governments ought to do? That's the question that we are going to ask on debate number one, right here on The Big Fight. Also on the show, the only way to crush the wave and bend the curve is vaccination. But our vaccination drive is slow. And at this rate, we won't be able to cover our entire population. We'll be speaking to a very special guest, a man who has a brand new vaccine in his sights. It is work in progress, let us tell you this. This vaccine will also work on children above 12. It is in its third phase of trials. Zydus MD, Dr. Sharvil Patel, will tell us how. And apart from his vaccine, what are his views on a TRIPS waiver, or allowing vaccination companies to share their technology with other manufacturers so that more people can produce more vaccines and thus the vaccination drive can pick up pace. Let's start with the first discussion right here on why should the courts have to come in the first place. They are doing a bulk of the work, the heavy lifting, which ideally needs to be done by governments. I would like to introduce Mr. Satyapal Jain, Additional Solicitor General of India. Thank you very much, Mr. Jain, for joining us. And Raghav Chadda, he is the MLA of the Aam Aadmi Party, who's also with us. Thank you very much to the two of you. Mr. Jain, let me ask you this question straight up. Why should it take governments to move courts? Take a look at the latest Karnataka experience, where the Karnataka government is saying we need 1,200 metric tons for Bengaluru, and the central government moved the Supreme Court. And then the Supreme Court said that, no, you have to give. The same thing happened in the case of Delhi. Why move courts?
See, under the Constitution of India, every citizen, every state has a right to go to any court, maybe High Court, maybe Supreme Court, for the any cause that it seems needs to be taken to the court. Kindly understand the process of allocation of oxygen, because that is the most important thing before you attribute anything to any person or any state. This oxygen availability in the entire country is the total available supply. Almost all the states in India are now asking for the oxygen. The government of India on 15th of April itself constituted a virtual control room in Delhi consisting of senior officers from different ministries. They are working 24 hours a day. They are in touch, constant touch with all the state governments. On the basis of the demand and the availability, they are allocating oxygen to all the states. It's not the case of any state that government of India is having some extra oxygen with it and it's not supplying to the states. Whatever availability is there, that has been distributed, and I have got the entire chart. All plants, all oxygen producing plants, the oxygen has been supplied. Number two, kindly keep one thing more in mind, and that is there are certain states which are having the oxygen plants of their own. Like Haryana has a plant, many other states are having. There are many states like Delhi, Punjab, Jammu, Kashmir, which do not have any oxygen plant. In its wisdom, without any ill will, without any discrimination, without any favor, this committee has been allocating the oxygen to different states. Delhi has gone to the High Court, Karnataka has gone to the High Court. Other, to my knowledge, no state other than these two has gone to the court. Courts have passed their order, which is now before the Supreme Court, coming hearing on Monday. What I'm saying is this, that so far as the central government is concerned, in its wisdom, with a view to do justice to all without any discrimination with any person, has allocated the gas, oxygen. Now, Supreme Court is hearing the matter. That is the Supreme Court, the highest court of the country.
Correct.
One more point I would like to clarify here.
Sure.
It has been made clear by the Government of India to the Supreme Court that in case you want to increase the supply of one state by 100 metric ton or 200 ton, then ultimately it will be at the cost of the other state. So we have placed all the facts before the Supreme Court. Court will decide. Let the court give us any direction that the court may deem fit.
Okay, and now this becomes an extremely tricky situation, Raghav Chadha, because while you are demanding, or as the allegation has been in the past, that you have not been able to manage your oxygen demand well, and now you're demanding more, so it will come at the cost of some other state, which if I were to translate to individuals, means that Delhi, a person in Delhi will get more oxygen because of all this, but that supply will have to be cut from someone else, say in another remote part of this country.
So, Sanket, first of all, I am also very concerned as to how an issue which is purely an administrative issue has now become a judicial issue. And it has happened because, you know, principles of cooperative federalism were perhaps not implemented or followed in full measure by the union government. As far as diverting one state's LMO to another state is concerned, and subject to correction by the learned counsel on the panel, the affidavit filed by the Government of India in the Supreme Court very clearly says that the current production of liquid medical oxygen is 8,500 metric tons, and it can go up to 22,500 metric tons. Therefore, right now, with 8,500 metric ton, the Government of India is able to supply to all states. And even if they have to ramp up its capacities, it can do it immediately and it can go up to 22,500, number one. It is also not the case of the Government of India that there is any shortage of cryogenic tankers. The Government of India on an affidavit has said before the Supreme Court that we have 1,631 tankers plying on the streets of India, which is certainly good in number. So the Government of India themselves have made this case, number one. Number two, as far as our demand is concerned, we are certainly being, as the Learned Council pointed out, that we are functioning with no ill will and center has been allocating to every state. Now, please help me understand. How is it that 18 states petition a committee headed by a very senior bureaucrat, Secretary DPIT, this committee, the sole responsibility of this committee is to allocate oxygen to every state. 18 states petition the committee seeking certain amount of oxygen. 17 out of those 18 get the exact amount of oxygen that they demand, or in some cases even higher than what they demand. The only exception is Delhi. Government of Delhi is not given that much amount of, the state of Delhi is not given that much amount of oxygen. Now, whether it is because of some prejudice, whether it is because of some ill will, that is best answered by that committee and not by me. I am not attributing.
No, but then Raghav, the argument is that you are not augmenting your demand well. How did Mumbai manage, whereas Delhi is not being able to manage with almost similar caseload?
Look, this is let me tell you, okay, let me respond to this. First of all, Sanket, Delhi's demand is calculated based on a formula given by the union government. The central government has given a formula that per ICU bed, you require 24 liters of oxygen per minute. Per non-ICU bed, you require 10 liters of oxygen per minute. And it is based on that calculation that we say that we require 976 metric ton of oxygen. So therefore, our demand is very scientific and every state has calculated the demand in the exact same manner.
Okay.
Number one. Number two. Comparing Mumbai with Delhi is like comparing apples with oranges. If there are certain best practices in Maharashtra, we will most certainly follow it and we will acknowledge it. But comparing Delhi's oxygen demand with Mumbai's oxygen demand is like comparing apples with oranges because of the following two, three reasons. Number one, the number of oxygenated non-ICU beds in Delhi is twice that of Mumbai. The number of ICU oxygenated beds in Delhi is 1.5 times Mumbai. Number of positive cases in Delhi is twice Mumbai's positive cases. And the number of RT-PCR tests conducted in Delhi is 1.5
times. Okay, fine. So you built your argument.
So therefore, just let me finish. So therefore, when the number of oxygenated beds is higher, caseload is higher.
So the demand for oxygen will be more. Okay,
course,
Mr. Jain.
Lastly,
would you like to respond? Raghav Chadha has made his arguments. He has presented facts, figures, logic. How would you respond?
Also, may I tell Mr. Raghav Chadha, he was very fair when he said that Delhi, the government of India has been allocating oxygen to different states and to Delhi also. It's not only that the Delhi government is wanting more oxygen. Karnataka is a BJP government. They are also wanting more oxygen. Haryana, today in Punjab and Haryana High Court, the Advocate General of Haryana said, we demand more, we have been given less. The Punjab also said it, even Union Territory Chandigarh lawyer, who is a part of the Ministry of Home Affairs, they are also demanding more. And I'm not saying that their demand is not justified. They will have their justification for more demand. Now the question is, whatever is available with us at the moment, we have to distribute that without any ill will. Mr. Chadha, there is an oxygen plant in Panipat with a capacity of 280 metric ton. Out of that, to Haryana, we are supplying only 80 metric ton, and to Delhi, 170. The Haryana government, which is a BJP ruled government, today made a grievance in the High Court saying, why are you supplying more to other state, and it's a plant within the state of Haryana, and why not to us? And I replied back, so far as Union of India is concerned, all states are equal, all citizens are equal, we have to take care of all the states, and with a formula that is applicable to all the states, maybe BJP, maybe Aam Aadmi Party, maybe Congress, we are supplying oxygen. Therefore, do not attribute any motive that it is because of political consideration. It is not because of political. Had it been political, why should Haryana government, why should Karnataka government come for that purpose? Now, the only thing is, whatever oxygen is available, we are distributing.
No, but Mr. Jain, Raghav Chadha says that you have basically told the courts in an affidavit that you can ramp up the supply. By the own admission of the central government, you can increase your capacity also. You have sufficient tankers also.
Our capacity, kindly understand, Panipat, because of overheating, because of the overheating of the plant, the capacity was reduced to by 20 metric ton. These are the scientific problems, technical problems. Yeah. It is not the case that we are having extra oxygen.
But one moment. Was this brought forward in front of the courts? Because the courts have used extremely strong language. Powerful observations. See, have you brought out these practical difficulties in front of the... I'm sure the court will understand.
I see the Honorable Supreme Court is the highest and the Supreme Court of the country. Their lordships have every right to pass any observation, comment or oral observation. Still, matter is under consideration. It is coming for hearing on Monday.
Yeah.
We are placing all the facts.
Raghav Chadha, your response.
Look, as far as this Panipat example is concerned, this is one stray example of one particular plant which is in geographical proximity to Delhi. Now, I can give you several names of several plants where the allocation is made to Haryana, to UP, to Rajasthan, to Punjab, but not to Delhi. So, you can't go by one plant close to Delhi. You have to look at the overall state allocation of oxygen, number one. Number two, all these arguments that the Learned Council is making on your show are the same arguments that were made by the Learned Solicitor General before the Supreme Court. All these arguments were considered by court. The court found no merit in these arguments, and therefore the court has passed strictures against the union government. Now, I don't relish this fact that the Union of India has been lambasted by the Supreme Court. I am merely concerned with the supply of oxygen. Now, if tomorrow, without judicial intervention, if the government of India can provide 976 metric ton of oxygen to Delhi, I will be, and my government, my chief minister will be the happiest person on earth. And therefore, you need to also understand, which was highlighted by High Court and by Supreme Court, that Delhi is not an industry state. We don't have steel plants. We don't have oxygen manufacturing plants. We don't have cryogenic tankers flying on the streets of Delhi.
Okay.
And because the union government is a national government, the High Court said that the national government has a special responsibility towards Delhi, and they must honor that
responsibility. Okay, Mr. Jain, would you like to respond?
Supreme Court is not budging from the 700 metric ton figure.
Total production of oxygen in Punjab, Haryana, UP, Himachal Pradesh, Jammu, Kashmir and Delhi is 417 metric ton in all these states. And their requirement is 1180 metric ton. Tell me, if we have to supply even the entire production of this area, even then Delhi, the capacity will not be there. It has to be from other states. And I have got a full chart which we have placed before the Supreme Court. From all the plants we have seen to it, those states which are not producing oxygen...
No, I agree, Mr. Jain. But when, you know, if there is a demand, then what do you do? Unfortunately, there is an increased demand right now. So what do you do?
Whatever is available, we are doing every day.
I will respond. I'll give a suggestion.
One by one, please. Let Mr. Jain complete. Mr. Jain, if you could quickly complete.
These suggestions are most welcome. Our virtual control room is working 24 hours a day in Delhi. The names of the officers, team is circulated to all the states. And that team is in touch with the representative of all the states. When we finalize the allotment, it is done in consultation with all those people.
Now, Mr. Chadha, I want to come to you. You tell me.
For the political reason, you may blame the center or the other party.
I'm not attributing motives. This is not the time to do, Mr. Jain. I'm not playing politics. I've not blamed any political party. I am merely saying that it is not my case and not my government's case in the Supreme Court that the country has excess liquid medical oxygen. It is your client, which is the government of India's case, that they have excess capacities. They have 22,500 metric ton of LMO, which is thrice the amount of LMO required in the country right now. It is your case that you have 1,631 cryogenic tankers. So it is not my case. If you make that case before the Supreme Court in its wisdom will trust your affidavit and believe that there is excess capacity. And therefore, by the extension of that logic, I'm not saying that Delhi alone should get 976. Haryana should get, UP should get, Punjab should get, every state in this country should get the right amounts of oxygen. Now we are suffering. We have seen some casualties happen because of deprivation of oxygen. So therefore, I think it is as a responsible government, we have been petitioning you. I am not saying for one that the officer
let me get a response to that. Mr. Satyapal Jain, Raghav Chadha seems to be mentioning this repeatedly. He has said this again right now that you have told the Supreme Court that you have the capability to ramp up your capacity up to 22,000 metric tons. Right? Now, if that happens, then this problem is solved. So if you have told the Supreme Court this, then what is the problem?
We have placed all the facts before the Supreme Court. We have also placed this chart before the Supreme Court, which shows how many oxygen is available at which plant, which state, how much is being supplied to each and every state out of that. Total figures have been placed. So the observation of the Supreme Court are welcome. Their lordships, even the senior judges have a right to make any observation or comment.
Mr. Jain, you will not be able to invent oxygen, no? You can only produce so much. So my point is, if I were to believe Mr. Raghav Chadha, who is saying that you have told the Supreme Court that the capacity of the central government of all these plants is 22,000 metric tons plus, then what is the practical problem in ramping it up to that level?
We have told the Supreme Court that this is the total oxygen available to us and this is the distribution we are giving. If we get more from any other source, it will also be distributed in the same share. We don't want to keep something for us. Whatever is available, we are distributing. And ultimately, on Monday, Supreme Court will hear all the states, the central government, go through all the figures given by us also, by the states also. Whatever is the order of the Supreme Court will be applicable to all.
Okay. Raghav Chadha.
Look, I just one suggestion, Sanket. First of all, yes, there is excess capacity and it is filed on affidavit by the central government. Number two, simply because one plant in Panipat is producing 280 metric ton, a chunk of it is coming to Delhi, etc., is not a meritorious argument, simply because the eastern part of India, states like West Bengal, Odisha, etc., have a lot of capacity to produce. And some of that is being captively consumed. So therefore, a lot of those production plants that are producing oxygen, which have been tapped, perhaps some of them are untapped, should be used and oxygen should be diverted to the northern Indian region, largely at this point in time, because the caseload is increasing, number one. Number two, I also wish to say to the government of India that the Supreme Court's direction was that 700 metric ton of oxygen should be given to Delhi every single day. A day before, we got 730 metric ton, and the Honorable Chief Minister thanked the Prime Minister, and he wrote a letter, held a press conference, and thanked the Honorable Prime Minister. All of us did. But yesterday, Sanket, the 730 metric ton supply of oxygen was reduced to 577 metric ton of oxygen, which is roughly 59% of my demand. My total demand is 976. Yesterday, I got only 577 metric ton of oxygen. If I am getting only 59-60% of the overall oxygen requirement, how do hospitals...
I think it is very clear, Mr. Jain, why don't you spell it out? There is a shortage, even now, isn't it? And that's why you're not being able to augment the supply.
See, whatever the supply is available to us, we are very fairly, reasonably, without any ill will, without any favor or discrimination, distributing to all the states. Let Mr. Raghav Chadha point out any plant in any state. I have got the chart with me. I will tell him how much oxygen is being produced there, how much is being given to each and every state. We cannot give
I know
the
that.
Entire supply from one plant to that state itself. We have to take
that
care of the
far
off places also. Jammu Kashmir, they don't have any oxygen plant. If we don't
sir,
give them from Panipat, from
sir,
where else
is,
they will get it?
Mr. Jain, that is not my plea before you. That is not my case. I am not concerned with the oxygen supply of one particular plant. I am saying you give to Delhi from 100
okay,
plants.
But you know, my,
but give
again,
me 700 metric ton.
Delhi, we are giving, may I tell you, Delhi is being given from Panipat, from Rotiwala.
No, no, how
from
much?
Bukaro,
how much?
From Bokaro. Just a minute. Just a minute.
Quantity is what is of
from
of
Kela, from Kalinganagar.
Kalinganagar, Durgapur, Rourkela, Kashinagar, I know
state.
All these places.
No discrimination
no, no.
from Delhi government.
Mr. Jain, the amount, I am on the quantity supplied, not
okay,
from the
okay.
place.
No, you know, this is not a court. I really do not want to make this the courtroom. The point really of this debate is that why did this matter have to go to the courts? These discussions could have happened between two governments. And I think that's the larger problem that is being discussed. Even now, from here on, are we doing it right? Or will we see continued intervention of the various high courts and also the Supreme Court? Thank you very much, Mr. Jain, as well as Mr. Chadha, for joining us. We also spoke to Kapil Sibal of the Congress Party just a short while ago. Mr. Sibal, thank you so much for joining us. My first question, do you think that the courts are being made to do the jobs that otherwise governments are supposed to do as far as the oxygen emergency?
What are courts there for? When governments don't do their job, courts have to step in. And it's unfortunate that the government is caught napping. They never made any preparations for the second wave. They had no idea. In fact, they were congratulating themselves in the World Economic Forum, saying that, look, India is an example as to how to deal with COVID, not realizing that India would become an example as to how to not deal with COVID. They didn't know that the second wave would require them to be prepared, and therefore they've lost their way, and courts are now desperate because they want to save people's lives. And the way this government has dealt with this pandemic has shown their complete lack of concern and foresight as to what would happen if the second wave had come. And now there's a possibility of a third wave, and the court is now ensuring that we are prepared for that if at all it comes.
Yes, Mr. Sibal, the sort of observations that have been made, particularly by high courts, you see that there is Delhi High Court, there is Madras High Court, Calcutta High Court, Allahabad High Court, words like ostrich, we'll hang people, you are in contempt. You know, beyond observations, do you think that this is a moment of great desperation with which governments are dealing in courts, where sometimes even courts find themselves helpless?
Well, naturally, because death has reached the doorstep of every individual in this country. I mean, judges, ministers, ordinary people, poor people. You know, pandemic doesn't discriminate. A virus doesn't discriminate. And now we see death at the doorsteps of almost every family. And in that situation, when the government is not ready with testing, with results of testing, with a human resource, with cylinders, with oxygen, with they're not ready with anything, with beds, with ICUs. They're not ready with anything because they never had a plan. And they were obliged under the Disaster Management Act to have a national plan, to have a state plan, to have a district plan. But they were sort of just congratulating themselves as to how we didn't lose so many people in the first wave of the pandemic.
All right, let's now speak to some doctors also to get in some expert advice on what really are the solutions and the real problem being faced in hospitals as far as oxygen shortage is concerned. Dr. Alok Roy, chairman of the Medica Group. Thank you very much, Dr. Roy. You're also the head of health services for FICCI. We have Dr. Joseph Brito, former consultant in pediatric intensive care and infectious diseases at Imperial College, London. And we've got Dr. Vishal Rao. He is the Dean of the Center for Academic Research, HCG. Thank you very much. I want to start with you, Dr. Roy, first. Now, your hospital is in West Bengal, right? The Medica Hospital. And West Bengal
yes.
is considered as, an oxygen-rich state. an oxygen surplus state. So I don't think West Bengal is facing much of the problem that the national capital of Delhi or the state of Karnataka is facing. But, you know, out of your wisdom and experience, what really can be done as of this moment so that the, you know, hospitals or owners of hospitals don't have to rush to courts? You saw the manner in which many hospital owners and doctors had to move courts when their real job was to attend to patients.
Thank you, sir. Fortunately, we are in a state which is oxygen rich. And besides that, the administration, the government was very, very conscious, and they formed a group and very high powered IAS people who were in charge of oxygen supply at different places. Now, oxygen is not a problem. Our problem at this point of time in relation to oxygen is that we are not getting the pipes, copper pipes. If we want to expand, like the government wants us to expand to the more hospitals, we are not getting enough pipes, we are not getting enough connectors, we are not getting enough people to come and implement it, manifold rooms. Those are becoming our bottlenecks. So we're not able to expand. Though, wherever we are, there's enough supply of oxygen in that area, in that hospital. So, but the smaller hospitals, which depend on cylinders, they are facing problem because of transportation and the refilling and filling. Those are the logistics problem. It has got nothing to do with the oxygen supply in the state.
Yes, and Dr. Roy, how do you suggest, you know, what do you suggest? These are the problems that you highlighted. What do you think needs to be done as of this moment at record speed? Because, you know, we are not just looking at the second wave. We also have to prepare for a third wave. Expert after expert is saying that you got a bigger worry. It's going to affect children also. So what's really the solution that you would like to share with the government?
Solution is that we must stop the black marketing. The hoarding of cylinders are a real cause for the cylinder shortage. There's no shortage of oxygen in West Bengal, at least. But the hoarding of cylinders has made cylinders disappear. So the cylinders which were in circulation for refilling have disappeared. As a result, we have shortage. We have a shortage of all the associated equipments required for oxygen supply, like copper pipes, like connectors, like the where you plug in the oxygen into the wall. Those contraptions are missing. Now, what is happening that they all come from the outside of the state. And those places like Ludhiana and all that are in shutdown and lockdown mode. As a result, they're not coming in. So even if we have extra oxygen,
you won't be able to use them. Ah, very interesting. Very interesting. And, and you know, is this manufactured in India or do we need to import this?
They're all manufactured in India. They are not just able to be reaching to us in the right amount.
Oh, that's terrible. Because of the lockdown, all of this is shut. And that's why all that chain has gotten disturbed. I think that's a very important suggestion. The government must look into this because even if your hospital being in an oxygen-rich state, you will not be able to expand your facilities simply because you do not have the... I think that's very, very interesting. The government must look into this. Dr. Brito, I want your... We'll start with you. What have you spotted as the problems and what are the possible solutions that you can look at?
Sanket, thank you. Thank you for focusing on this colossal and apparently insurmountable crisis that we as a nation face. Let me give clinical context as to the use of oxygen. Oxygen for COVID lung disease is not curative. It doesn't address the underlying disease process. Patients, ideally for the best outcomes, need to be admitted in hospital. And in addition to high flow oxygen, most peer-reviewed protocols require that intravenous steroid, subcutaneous heparin and heparin drug-like drugs need to be administered under close clinical supervision. And should the need arise to escalate from high flow oxygen, we need the ability to provide non-invasive ventilation, which is positive pressure ventilation using a tight-fitting face mask. We will never have enough oxygen. We will never have enough hospital beds. We have to stop focusing on mopping the water off the floor. And at some stage, we have to turn off the tap. An E-size oxygen cylinder, which is about 26 inches, has 680 liters of oxygen. At a flow rate of 10 liters per minute, will last just 68 minutes. The course of COVID lung disease is days. It's not weeks or hours. Take a jumbo-sized cylinder, 52 inches, 7,000 liters, 10 liters a minute, will last for 11 hours, 40 minutes. And these will have to be replaced.
Mm.
And therefore, I want to add my voice and appeal to Prime Minister Modi, who has the power to commit the nation to a moonshot decision, is to procure and purchase immediately, starting tonight, vaccine doses for 1 billion. That's the only solution to deal with this pandemic and sadly for the next pandemic.
Hmm.
The pandemics are going to come at us in cycles, and we do need to establish, to answer your question, Sanket, we do need to establish a central vaccine agency managed by technocrats that is tasked with the immediate task of procuring and purchasing vaccines. The data suggests that there are 300 million doses of the very same AstraZeneca vaccine, which in India we call Covishield, which by July will be available in the United States. The United States hasn't given emergency use authorization to AstraZeneca. And therefore, these doses need to be procured by India, given that the pandemic is raging here. And these doses need to be administered 24/7 through our vaccine agencies. And we also need to focus on gene sequencing. To establish vaccine platforms in our country by doing licensing arrangements with different vaccine manufacturers,
and there are
21 such vaccines on the COVAX platform. Four of them are already in stage 4, which is data is being generated for quite extensive use.
Correct.
There are 17 in stage 3. Agnostic to the origin, country of origin, we need to establish licensing arrangements so that we can, it won't solve the immediate problem, but months from now, without being earlier point, being distracted by trips.
I think these are very important suggestions, and you know, medical expert after expert is saying that your only solution will be vaccination. Look at the Israel model, where they were able to vaccinate fast, and now they seem to be in a comfortable situation. But the thing with this pandemic, Dr. Rao, is that if one country is not safe, then the whole world is not safe, because the virus will mutate and then come and affect everyone, one and all. So the whole globe needs to be vaccinated. Dr. Rao, in your state, you're of course part of the COVID task force in Karnataka. In your state, we see a peculiar problem again, where you need more oxygen, more supplies. And again, this matter unfortunately reached the courts. You think this is proving to be the big worry, that at a time when obviously the bulk of the energy should be concentrated on solving the problem, we're trying to look at those solutions in courtrooms?
Absolutely, Sanket. Sanket, at this juncture, I have some facts to place before you.
Yeah.
I think the most important thing currently is, when we look at the state, I think obviously the demand is at around 1,500 metric ton, and there is a gap of nearly half of it. So we're getting about 800 or 900 metric ton. That's definitely not good enough. Now, this translates directly into hospitals. So every hospital, on a logical way, who's treating COVID requires either double or triple amount of oxygen that they were usually using on a regular day. Now, the calculations that have been made, and I think this is something that also the Honorable Supreme Court has pointed out, has been made on the assumptions of beds. That, like, for example, Karnataka currently must have had 1 lakh beds, of which 50,000 are oxygenated. The calculations made are based on the aspect that oxygenated bed needs 10 liters per minute oxygen, and an ICU bed requires about 24 liters of oxygen. But what has not been factored in is there are several breathless people who are out there at homes who are still needing oxygen. And the assumption is that there are 17% of the daily numbers that come out need oxygen. So if you're calculating 1 lakh, 17,000 of them need oxygen. Now, of them, 5% of them is going to go into a ventilator. Now, this is a serious gap. And there's another very important aspect, Sanket. that there is a difference between cities and districts. So I must tell you, I'm privileged to be in a city like Bangalore where oxygen comes to the hospital every day. But if one day the hospital does not get oxygen, there is going to be panic. On the same time, there are districts, smaller districts, and this is what India comprises of, wherein every day a person has to take the cylinder from the hospital and go and fill it. Now, currently, even there is going to be panic in the next coming days. Correct. Because what happens, and another very, very serious concern which I've been worried about is, what about non-communicable diseases? We've all forgotten that there are heart attacks, there are cardiac diseases, there are renal diseases, there are other things like neurological problems, and where we've completely neglected them. And I think a large amount of mortality will also be pertaining to these.
Correct.
We've had patients who are asking us that with dialysis, what do we do? Where do we go? So there is absolute
and this is exactly why we circle back to the point that that was being made by just a short while ago by Dr. Brito, that the only solution is vaccination, and that has to be on war footing. Well, thank you so much. Let's hope that the government is listening to all these important suggestions in hospital, the suggestions made or the requirements put forward by Dr. Roy, and the point that Dr. Brito made. The only way out of this is faster vaccination. And speaking of that, on the other side of the break, we'll get you a man who could probably have some good news in this time of doom and gloom. The COVID good news. A new vaccine is in the works. It is also working on kids 12 years and above. What are the details? We'll tell you after a short break. Joining us right now is a very special guest. Remember, lots of things have been said about the TRIPS waiver. Now, what is a TRIPS waiver? Well, this basically means that the companies that hold patents as far as licensing is concerned on vaccines, whether there should be a waiver in that licensing so that more manufacturers can manufacture. Should that be the case? Is this the road to take as far as India is concerned? That is one issue. The guest who we are about to speak to today is also very, very important because he answers the vaccine question on two counts. Number one, whether there should be a waiver or a compulsory license. And number two, whether we should have more vaccines. And his company, the Zydus Group, is they have a new vaccine in their sights. Thank you very much. I would like to welcome Dr. Sharvil Patel. Dr. Patel, first of all, I want to know from you, what is your opinion on the TRIPS waiver?
So thank you, Sanket, for having me here. So I think that it's a welcome move. I think as part of the global effort to make vaccines more accessible across the world, I think one aspect of it is obviously to waive the IP. But more critically, if you want to make the vaccines accessible, then the critical aspect of this is that we need technology transfer from the companies that have innovated these vaccines, because vaccines is a very complicated process. It's anywhere between a 30 to 60 day process, somewhere as long as a 90 day process. And it's a biological system that we are working with. So unless we get help from the technology transfer aspects from the innovator, it's very difficult to make and replicate a vaccine in a short period of time. So I believe the real effort needs to be made that the companies are willing to find good partners to do this transfer, which has already happened. You see many examples of that in India, including the AstraZeneca partnership, which was the originally Oxford partnership. Or if you look at the biological E with J&J, or if you look at Sputnik, who have found four or five manufacturers in our country. So I think more effort is needed on that part. And if we can do that, we can have more access and more faster access to these vaccines.
Sure. Dr. Patel, are you trying to imply that it would be far better for this exercise to be voluntary rather than compulsory, where governments decide that we take these licenses and give it to all? You feel that it will be much better if companies decide themselves?
Always so, because I believe unless the partner is able, I mean, unless the company which owns the IP is able to help the companies whom they're giving the technology to, it will become very difficult and it'll be a more longer process. Because let's be clear, when an IP is filed, IPs are very broad in nature. they file a very wide range of aspects of how you are supposed to make their vaccine. Now, vaccine involves anywhere between 8 to 10 steps, and it requires, as I said, a long period of time. So it you need to control various parameters, and so you need help from the company who has developed it so that you don't waste time doing the whole development again. So I'll give you one example. You know, generally, they'll give a pH range between X to Y. Now, they will be only following a particular pH to make the vaccine a part of the expression system. So unless you know that, you're going to do trials and errors to find out that aspect of which is the most optimum way of producing a particular type of vaccine. So like that, there are so many processes. The second is all of them have proprietary technologies in terms of adjuvants, in terms of column chromatography, which is acquired from somewhere. So if you don't have those access, so even if you have the whole IP, unless you can access the technology in terms of the raw material or the equipment, you will not be able to produce it. So I think all of those things are required. So as I said, the best way would be that companies come forward and find suitable partners in different countries and help in technology transfer.
But, you know, Dr. Patel, there is a problem there. Do you think that this voluntary nature of companies sharing licenses or sharing information with one another is not happening fast? That companies need to sign in more partners and soon so that the governments do not have to step in.
Yes, so I definitely feel that the voluntary aspect of it is the more critical side, which maybe governments, countries, and even companies can talk. And finding more partners so that more manufacturing can happen. It's not easy for a manufacturer, because they need to put a good amount of resources to help in doing so. So they should find serious vaccine players who are able to commit to doing this.
Interesting. Okay, Dr. Patel, let's now talk about your company's plans. Would you like to share some plans with us? We've all heard of the Virafin, which is, of course, the drug. Tell us more about it. How is it placed? And also, the new vaccine you seem to be working on.
About two things. One is obviously the first, which is the drug, which is the pegylated interferon, which is the brand name is Virafin. So, you know, I think it's one of the strongest antiviral drugs that we have been able to bring to the market. Today, you know, the critical drug that is used today is remdesivir and some of the other antivirals. Our drug is significantly more potent than any of the standard of care that is available today in terms of antivirals. The other beauty of this product is, interferons are naturally occurring proteins in our body. So the first mechanism to stop virus amplifying is the production of interferon that the whole human body does. And then the whole immune system gets activated to eliminate the virus. This has been very well demonstrated because this drug has been used extensively in hepatitis B and C treatments, which are other viruses of known origin. So when we did our clinical work with this product, the beauty of it is only a single injection that you need to administer and can be done by any medical practitioner. So you don't need to be in a hospital setting to do any of this. And when we were able to do this, we showed improvement in both people becoming RT-PCR negative in day 7. 91% of them did so. We showed significantly lower requirement of oxygen support. We showed much lesser symptoms, which are critical in terms of looking at it. And on the WHO ordinal scale, which is the marker for looking at efficacy, we showed a 2-point improvement by day 8. So this gave us a confidence that this drug definitely can be of choice if administered early. And that's how we are being able to repurpose this drug and bring it now to the country. So that is to do with our antiviral drug,
vaccine,
which is the first first line of treatment if somebody's infected with the disease. Our second, which is, you know, the vaccine, which we're very excited about is, you know, we are the only DNA-based vaccine in the country and globally now, which has reached and almost completed phase 3. In a way, it's like the RNA vaccine, but we go one step forward by producing DNA, which is a double helix. The trials have gone well. We have done one of the largest clinical trials in the country, where we have covered 28,000 volunteers. We have covered all age groups, including age group of 12 to 18. So that will be significant from our clinical evidence point of view. Again, the other good part of it is that in spite of vaccines being available, we could finish our recruitment almost on time. So that talks about the positivity of people who were administered this vaccine. We'll see the efficacy data, and I believe this will be one of the strongest reflections of the current pandemic that is there, because, you know, we have multiple strains that are present in our country, and we have covered the length and breadth of the country in terms of doing the trial. So whatever efficacy we get to see will be, in a way, a good representation of what is the current, you know, how this vaccine would work against all the kinds of strains that are present in the country. And we wait for that. In May, we should see that data. The other beauty of this vaccine is that it is a needle-free injection. So we don't use any kind of needle to give this injection. It is an intradermal injection. So it is only going into the skin and not a large needle that gets into the muscle.
Okay.
And so the ease of administration, the hesitancy for taking injections, vaccination, all of this could be removed for it, especially people who are worried about it, and especially younger children. Yeah. Who will be even more worried about such aspects of it.
Yeah.
And it's proven to be very safe, that I already know. So we have very strong safety data now. So we are just awaiting our efficacy data. And once we see that, we will be able to roll it out in the month of May.
I think that's great news. You've given us lots of hope, Dr. Patel. This is great news. Would you like to tell us a little bit more about this new vaccine, for instance? How does the vaccine get soaked into the skin? And also 12 to 18, which basically means that in the third phase, when we're talking about it affecting children more, we will have an Indian vaccine ready for children above 12. Would you like to tell us a little bit more? Elaborate.
So it is done by pressure and perfusion. And it is only in the upper dermis of the skin, so the early part of the skin. So it just forms a small bump, so to say, and you put a very small amount, only 100 microliters of the dose. So it's a very, very, it's like a drop of the dose that goes into the skin. So those are the benefits of this. The other good part of it is a thermostable vaccine. So definitely stable at 2 to 8, but at 4 months, it's stable at 25 degrees also. Also, the vaccine is stable through the freezing and thawing. You know, we know of a lot of vaccines going bad because they're frozen, and, you know, they should have not been frozen. Our vaccine has been tested where if you go through multiple freeze-thaw cycles, it's still stable and effectively can be used. So we'll hope less wastage or less errors would happen by using of the vaccine, which is, again, a positive part of it. Again, it uses no live viruses or replicating viruses, so it's very safe and can be done. Multiple dosing is possible with this vaccine when we need more interest. And the beauty, again, of this platform is that it is easily transformable to new variants. So, you know, we have already made the new doses for the or the new application for the British variant, the South African variant, as well as the Brazilian variant. And we are almost getting ready with our Indian variant. We already finished animal studies on the earlier three variants to show safety. And because nothing changes in the vaccine prototype, we can easily repurpose it. So I believe when strains of concern grow and whichever becomes the more dominant strain, we should be able to repurpose our vaccines also without any difficulty, because nothing changes in making the vaccine.
This is brilliant news, Dr. Patel. First of all, could work on kids 12 to 18 years of age, available in different variants, can be quickly changed. Two things which are a point of concern in this great news that you are giving us, Dr. Patel, in these times of doom and gloom, and they're very important as far as vaccines are concerned: cost and availability. Both these issues are being debated in the existing vaccines right now. Would you like to share something with us on these two counts?
So yes, I think for a country like ours, both distribution of the vaccine equitably as well as the cost matter and the quantities matter, because we are by far one of the largest, I mean, our program is by far the largest vaccination program that any country can have. So on that point of view, what we have been able to do so far is committed to produce about 1 crore doses per month. In the initial days, we are finding two other manufacturers whom we're discussing with, that if we can partner with them and do a technology transfer, we increase that capacity. We are also working to see how do we improve our yields and other aspects of what we can do to double our capacity from 1 crore to 2 crores per month. So that is our current endeavor, and we are looking at all options, including finding partners to be able to make this. The challenge is, as always, you know, everybody has some capacity, but not the capacity that you want. So, you know, we could give more people to do it, but everybody's only able to produce lakhs in lakhs and not in crores. So, you know, the whole effort gets wasted if you only get a few lakh doses and you find too many manufacturers to do it. So we are looking to see how do we do that and double our capacity. So we are hoping we'll achieve 2 crore, but definitely we'll start off with creating 1 crore
doses per month.
We are looking at the pricing of the vaccine. As we come closer to our approval and the way the regulators look at it, we will obviously make it more affordable and equally affordable as the other vaccines are. And our goal and purpose is to make it more affordable. If you look at our current track record, you know, when hydroxychloroquine was the need of the hour last year, we launched it at the lower than 10 PPA price. When we had remdesivir, today we are 1/4 of the cost of remdesivir than any other remdesivir in the country. If you look at dexamethasone, which is the corticosteroid of choice, which is used, we are the lowest priced corticosteroid in the country. So I think our endeavor is that in this time, we have to make sure that we make the product accessible. At the same time, obviously, we have to recoup all our loss cost that we have put in.
Correct.
And make it equitable for us also.
No, I think
you should be able to do that.
Yeah, Dr. Patel, this is very encouraging when you say that you're working on availability and not through a forced compulsory license, but you're tying up with more companies, which is great, which takes care of the aspect of availability. And then number two, the point on it being affordable, where you're saying that it could be equally affordable or cheaper than the existing vaccines that are available in the market. This will be great news when this is going to happen. My question, Dr. Patel, what's your vaccine going to be called? What's its name?
It's going to be called ZyCoV-D.
What?
ZyCoV-D.
ZyCoV-D. That's after Covishield and Covaxin, that's going to be slightly difficult to pronounce. But if it does its job, it's absolutely fine, whatever the name is. Have you applied for its emergency use? And if not, when are you going to do that?
So we will get our efficacy data, we believe we'll get it in May, and we are hoping to file for emergency use in May. The current process of reviewing such products is fast at the regulator's end, so we believe we can get our approval in May itself if we are able to get the efficacy by mid-May.
Brilliant. This is great news. Thank you so much for filling us with so much joy. With this particular news. Let's hope this happens soon. Good luck to you, and thank you so much for joining us right here on NDTV. Thank you, Dr. Patel.